The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
More with Bill Meyer.
Good morning. It is, I was going to say Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but I recall, I'm a day off. It's Wheels Up Wednesday. Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters will be joining me here in about 20 minutes. Always great conversation. And we're going to dig into one of my favorite articles I've been reading him from him recently had to do with what is the cost of maintaining the clunker, or, you know, in other words, to hang on to the clunker or to get rid of the clunker, you know, the ups and the downsides, you know, of that various actions. So we'll have a conversation about that and a bunch more, of course, his latest reviews and talk, which I think a lot of the reviews right now are, how big is the touchscreen? You know, does the touchscreen cover the entire dash? Well, ooh, that's a really cool car. You know, that's kind of where we are right now. But anyway, we'll have that kicked around. Also invited the Jackson County clerk, Chris Walker, to come on the program. Because yesterday we were talking about some of the emails coming in, people getting the wrong kind of ballot. They thought that they were Republican, registered Republican, and they got the Democrat. We got some of that. And also, they thought that they were registered Republican. They get the non-affiliated voter, or the independent one that doesn't have any partisan races on it. And so they're kind of confused about this. And I'm telling everybody, hey, you just got to get in touch with the county clerk. And we're starting to find out that a lot of people have signed up for something within the DMV, and they don't look at all their paperwork. Just about any time you burp at the Department of Motor Vehicles in the state of Oregon, they're ready to turn you into a Democrat or a non-affiliated voter. Now, that's not something going through the clerk's office, but it seems to be something which is happening to a lot of people that, unless you're really careful when you're changing addresses and doing various other things, other people were wondering, well, why did I get two ballots? And Chris was telling me off the air that she had actually looked at my Facebook page and had seen a couple of people. Hey, why did they get two ballots? And one person took a couple pictures of it. I didn't even get involved in the conversation because I had so many things going on that night. But Chris was paying attention, to her credit. And she was telling me that, and she'll flesh this out more next hour, that what happens a lot of times is you change something with the DMV, which then triggers another situation to the county clerk's offices to send a replacement ballot because of something that you have done with the DMV, whether you changed party affiliation accidentally or intentionally or mistakenly. I mean, you just never know. People will check wrong boxes there, too. And the other ballot, which does all the ballots, I guess, have a code on them, individual codes. That ballot that gets electronically destroyed, you still may have it, but you can't you use it. If you try to use it, it would get kicked out of the machine. But she'll explain that a little bit. Anyway, we'll have that conversation. Just thought, let's just go to her, and she's going to call in the show a little bit after 7 o'clock this morning. Then we're also going to be talking with Diane Linthicum, who is running for State Senate District 28, Klamath Falls, parts of Jackson County there too. And, well, the current state senator, Dennis Linthicum, who is running for Secretary of State. We're going to talk to them both separately, kind of in the same general time zone. And wanted to kick through that. And it is an interesting time. We find ourselves in a really interesting time here in this primary election season because, as I was talking about with Herman Bertschiger yesterday, there has been such a rise of the lobbies. The lobbies have just taken control, things that they've never really done. The lobbies have done a lot of work here. They've done a lot of work in the general election. You know, once we would choose our candidates, and then the lobbies would get involved, and they would say, okay, hey, we'll send you $25,000 for this to fight the Democrat, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. Now they're getting involved and picking candidates, actually picking the candidates, which I'm not so much a fan of. And when it comes to the state legislature and state races, we only have three. We only have three grassroots candidates here, grassroots conservatives, that are running for office here in Southwest Oregon. And that would be Dennis Linthicum. Of course, he's got a high lift to try to be a Secretary of State. You have Diane Linthicum trying to replace Dennis Linthicum in Senate District 28. And you have Noel Robinson. I'm sorry, that's just about it. All of the huge, massive money is in on everyone else running for the state legislature. I mean, and it's huge. It's huge. I mean, you look at, you know, the Goodwins and the Dave Hensleys. You see the, you know, more than $100,000 in some cases, $10,000 from this pharmaceutical company, $20,000 from this pharmaceutical company. And you start wondering, why is it that pharmaceutical companies seem to be so darn interested in who's going to be in the state Senate? You have to ask those kind of questions, right? You know, you're thinking state Senate. You know, we're not dealing with, oh, that's right, Oregon Health Authority. And who gets a seat at the table? You know, that kind of thing. But the money is going into the primary. It's massive. Linda and I were talking about this yesterday. And it's probably too late for us to do much. I mean, we ended up getting together with the Jackson County Republican women and doing those no on 15, 224, 225, and 226 town halls. Remember, we were doing that last week. And we had really great turnout, really great turnout. And I really appreciate you showing up and continuing to evangelize no on all of these, no on 17-116. And we're trying to think about what we could do next. And what we're thinking about doing next, and maybe we do it after the primaries because it's too late to do much this time around. But I think we're going to be putting on some seminars on how to read ORSTAR, how to use and read ORSTAR. ORSTAR is the Secretary of State's website in which all of the state races, your state and local races, all the money and the expenditures that a candidate makes, all the money they, he or she gets coming in, who it's coming from, how much is coming from, when did it get contributed, all the expenses that they send out, where are they spending money, which candidates are they transferring money to. So it's like legalized money laundering here in the state of Oregon. I'm sorry, it's just my opinion, but that's the way I look at our political system in the state of Oregon right now. Designed by Democrats for Democrats, and the Republicans figure, hey, we can play by these rules too. And that's just the way it goes. But it's a very difficult website to use. They don't make it easy, and which I'm sure doesn't surprise you at all, because they don't really want you knowing where the money is coming from and where it's going to. Well, who it's going to, I think, is more of what I'm trying to say. And what I think we're going to do is put on some seminars, which we get together, do some PowerPoint presentations, and we'll probably like go to the Roxy Ann Grange. Maybe we'll do another one with Holly in the Josephine County Republican Party office or something. And we'll sit down and we'll train a lot of citizen activists on how to use ORSTAR. Because I have to tell you, you could probably write political ads just by reading the contributions to many of our Republican candidates. You could write ads against them just by reading who's contributing to their campaigns. And it's really difficult for most people to get into it. And so we don't. I'll bet you if you talk to 99 out of 100 people, they wouldn't even know what ORSTAR is. But one of the things that would be really helpful would be to really start keeping track on, I mean, we know that money is the mother's milk of politics. And if we're going to be making informed choices, it might be a good idea for us to have a better idea of who's actually writing those huge $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $50,000 checks to some of the people who are claiming to be grassroots candidates. And I'm just an everyday, I'm just an ordinary everyday Joe. You know? So I'm torn. On one hand, I understand that we all need money. But on the other hand, who's, are you getting to the point where you are so bought and paid for by certain interests? You know, let's face it. If the Republican caucus likes a candidate, the Republican caucus in Salem, and the lobbies like the candidate and are writing hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of checks to them in a primary, you know, for crying out loud. The problem with it is that the lobbies in the Republican caucus are not necessarily looking out for the best interests of our actual constituents here in Southwest Oregon. So we have a little bit of a tension between, you know, what's good for the caucus, which means electing Republicans, no matter their quality, no matter how good of quality or conservative they are, how principled they are, or is it just another R with a pulse that is going to be pliable and help pass Democrat-sponsored bills? And the lobby likes those kind of Republicans. Then they write hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of checks to them because they know that they're a reliable source of, get an amendment in. We know you don't really have power, but you'll go along to get along with the Democrats. Maybe you can change something here or there. And by the way, here's $50,000. You know, that kind of thing. Now, I know the Democrats wouldn't like the idea of more Oregonians looking at their contributions, but I'd be willing to bet you a lot of Republicans wouldn't like us looking at their contributions either, even though it's absolutely free. It's out there in the open. It's hard to use, though. So stay tuned here in the next few weeks. I think we're going to be doing how to read OreStar and look up the contributions for good or not so good on people who are asking for your vote. That way we can get more. Now, by the way, this is only for state races and our Oregon races. It doesn't cover Congress. Congress would never want that. No, Congress never wants that kind of scrutiny. So we have a tool. We need to start using it a little bit better. Okay? This is the Bill Meyer Show, and you're on KMED and KCMD, and I appreciate you waking up here.
The People's Commissioner. Hi, this is Ron Smith, candidate for Josephine County Commission. So why do I say the people?
Bedford.com.
Hi, I'm Randall from Advanced Air, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
26 after 6. Let me go to, I think this is Tom. Hello, Tom. How you doing this morning on Wheels Up Wednesday? What's on your mind?
Doing fine, Bill. That was very interesting what you said. I never heard of such a thing that you were talking about, and I have called.
Oh, let me just catch people. Let me catch people up. Yeah, if they just joined, okay? I was talking about here how 99 out of 100 people, probably even fewer than that, have ever heard of the OreStar website, which is part of the Secretary of State's website. And it is a accounting of every expense and every dollar coming into state races and our local politicians, too. And it is very difficult to use. It's not very user-friendly, but it tells you a lot about politicians, and you could practically write anti-politician ads just by going through their, you know, who's writing them checks, that kind of thing. All right. So now you can continue. People who just woke up may not have heard it. Okay.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like I said, I've never heard of, and I have called on the radio for kind of that for such a site, and there's nothing to stop a private group who really believes in full disclosure to have a much more, take that information and make a much more negotiable website to so that people can really see where the money's coming and going. And by the way, you mentioned how much money's going from Big Pharma into the races and so forth. I've been talking with people about the Oregon Health Authority and people with insurance and so forth. Apparently, if you have good health insurance and you're the upper grades, there's no problems. But everybody else below that tier is suffering incredibly by the bureaucracy and the, I would call it, skullduggery of the Oregon Health Authority and fascism and everything that they're engaged in. They're horrible. And it's this whole thing about health care for all, it's a ruse, and the way it's functioning right now.
Yeah, it's going to be very poor, dysfunctional health care for all in the Oregon in the Oregon iteration. But you have the big pharmaceutical companies, also the hospital groups. They're writing huge checks to our state senators, candidates. I'm talking about not the grassroots candidates. They're writing big fat checks to the lobbies, the ones that Herman Berchiger was talking about yesterday, because the lobbies right now are doing their best, throwing everything at the wall right now to control not the general election, but who gets to be a candidate in the first place right now is what they're trying to do. And there's only one reason why you're writing that many tens of thousands of dollars of checks for, you know, local state reps. You know, come on. You know, there's only one reason why you do that.
Yeah, I think everyone has seen on the evening news and so forth that all the news is being sponsored by the drug companies. Why? Well, they don't, you know, if the news is getting all their money from the drug companies, then they're about to criticize them or reveal anything that's going on. So it's all about controlling the narrative for what? More money.
Yeah, well, let's just wait and see what happens next when the makers of Ozempic have the FDA require Ozempic to be put into the soy milk that is given to your kid in government school. You know, well, we have to prevent you from having diabetes.
Well,
kind of thing.
Counteract all the estrogen that's in all the junk food and crap food that they feed to the kids.
Good point. Hey, thanks for the call there, Tom. 6:30. Let me go to line one. I think this is Holly. Hello, Holly from Joe County. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. How are you doing? I'm hanging in there.
Good.
Trying to get over this daggone cough. I hope I don't cough.
Boy, yeah, you were sick at the Patriots conference or trying to get better at that point. And I know that was a rough weekend for you, I know.
This is a flu from hell. I'm trying to stay away from everybody so nobody catches it. It is an ugly flu.
Well, good.
But you know, what's really bothered me much more than this flu, and the thing you pointed out, there are two things. One, a lobbyist getting involved, but second, they put hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars into deceptive marketing. And that is really driving me crazy. You know, yesterday we got something from Christine Goodwin in the mail that looked like it was an endorsement from Donald Trump. But it was actually an endorsement of her for Donald Trump.
Oh, hey, wait a minute. I got that. I received that. I got that from Christine Goodwin here. Here it is. It has a picture of Donald Trump, and it says, Goodwin for State Senate, Trump endorsed, and then underneath it, by Goodwin, right? Huge endorsement. Let me read this. Okay, I saw this last night. I'm kind of laughing at this. It says, huge endorsement alert, Donald Trump endorsed by Christine Goodwin. This race comes down to securing the border, backing law and order, and getting rid of Joe Biden and Noah Robinson. So it's made to fool the rubes, the way the campaign people are looking at this, to fool you into thinking that Donald Trump endorsed Christine Goodwin, right? That kind of thing.
Right. And you know, it just adds to the other ones, the Second Amendment thing. Those are the kinds of things that drive us all crazy. And the minute one of those comes out, boom, I get 10 of them coming across my text. Have you seen this burning up my phone?
Yeah.
People are tired of the deceptive marketing. And, and we're tired of the lobbyists picking candidates, you know, putting them in our district. You know, if they don't live in there, you know, they set it all up. Oh, you just get this address.
Well, essentially you have Salem lobbyists that are up there in Salem in the Oregon version of the swamp. We're going to pick and choose and direct things that are going on in Josephine and Jackson and Curry and Coos. And, you know, because those people don't need to choose, you know, candidates that respect them. We need people that are pliable shills up here in Salem. That's essentially where they're going from. And it's just kind of sad, but that's where we find ourselves right now. They didn't used to do this in the primaries, as Herman was talking about yesterday.
Well, no, not that we noticed. But, you know, now that I think people are waking up, they're starting to figure out, gosh, who's running all these elections? You know, between the election integrity issues that we have, excuse me, and the whole deal, you got to wonder who's picking our candidates.
Yeah. And the thing is, we, the people of the areas of our various districts, should be picking them rather than, it's like we're having to fight the lobbies. That's really what we're all doing right now. It's like the grassroots is really like, the rebels, and you have the empire of the lobbies, both for the Democrat and the Republican uniparty in Salem. You know, that seems to be what we're fighting right now here, Holly.
The other thing is, there's a reason that our state constitution requires that people live in the district to run for these offices. And that is so they know what's going on. They know the various people and they know the issues in that particular area.
Yeah.
When you have lobbyists decide who's going to, you know, and just put somebody in, give them a dress or whatever, and put them into an area, they don't necessarily know the issues. And that's the problem.
Yeah. We'll see where this ends up going. Will the lobbies win or will we the people win? I guess we're going to find out. And it's a very interesting time. And I've never seen a primary a primary season like this one. Just never had. Now, maybe it's because Measure 110 ended up kicking out a lot of people from being able to run for office. So there were a lot of all of a sudden open seats, you know, that were there. And that may have had something to do with it. But remember, remember how the Republican Party didn't come out against 113. They put nothing in the voters' pamphlets. Nobody did that there when Measure 113 was up there. And I ultimately think it was because the lobbyists that were controlling most of the Republican Party in Salem were quite happy that the conservative grassroots people were being kicked out because they were a thorn in their side. I think that's what was going on. All right. Appreciate the call there, as Holly. Thank you for that. It's 6:35. We're going to take a break for news here right now. Some good stuff on the way with Eric Peters. EPautos.com. Wheels Up Wednesday next.
Jackson County. Vote no on measures 15-224, 225, and 226.
Take measure 15-226, which cuts commissioners.
99.3 KCMD. Yeah. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters joins me. EPautos.com, and we talk about cars and what's going on out there in the open road, the battle against the intruders, the empire of lies, otherwise known as Washington, D.C. Eric, welcome back. How the heck you doing?
I'm good, Bill. Thanks for having me, and as always, great bumpers. I wanted to recommend, I was thinking as I was listening to the one you just played, do you know ZZ Top Manic Mechanic?
Yes, I do. I know that song.
You ought to play that next time.
All right. I'll get Manic Mechanic out of the iPod for next week, all right?
Okay.
We'll do that. Hey, wanted to touch on your premier article this morning here. You know, coming out of the empire of lies, right? The hybrid boom. Now the automotive press is out there patting it. Oh, we have a boom on the hybrids right now, as if it is some just a naturally occurring sort of thing. Just organic. People all of a sudden just decided that they had to have a hybrid in their driveway, right?
Yeah, you know, my dad was a doctor, and I avoided medical school because I didn't want to have to do autopsies and digging and things of that nature. But I find myself having to do these etymological autopsies practically every day. So there was this piece in Automotive News, which is a big trade journal for the automotive industry, in which they talked about the so-called hybrid boom, as you say, as if it were a natural thing. Now, it's true, there is a hybrid boom, but it's not because people are clamoring for hybrids. It's because the manufacturers are being backed into this corner where the only kinds of vehicles that they can still produce with engines are hybrids. Like, for example, the current Toyota Camry, which no longer offers a V6, and comes only with a hybrid drivetrain, and this scales. I have a BMW X6, which is a high-end vehicle out in the driveway right now, and it, too, is a hybrid, as if people who spent $70,000 on a vehicle care whether it gets 3 or 4 miles per gallon more or less. It just, you know, it's only because of the need to comply with all of these federal fatwas.
Now, the thing is, you and I were talking about how of all the changes that have been brought to automotive technology, the hybrid actually made the most sense of all. In fact, what would have even made more sense was a small diesel hybrid, like what you're able to buy over in Europe in many cases, but you weren't allowed to have them here because Volkswagen had to be taken down because it was embarrassing the electric vehicle because you'd get something from Volkswagen back then, got 50, 60 miles a gallon, right? And that could not be.
I have absolutely nothing against hybrids. I think hybrids are wonderful vehicles. But the point is, this is merely a kind of temporary way station along the line toward full electrification. This is the last gasp, if we let them, of engined vehicles. It's the only way they can continue to comply with the latest round of federal fatwas, including the one that requires most manufacturers to average 50 miles per gallon. You're not going to do that without a hybrid in your lineup, or in fact, nothing but hybrids. And the point is that eventually it's going to be impossible to even build hybrids. That's the end goal here.
Because the end goal is, and by the way, I really do believe the end goal is not even the electric vehicle. The end goal is that only wealthy have vehicles and you take the bus. You know that's where they want to take it.
I think if they succeed in pushing all of the engine cars off the market so that the only option is the electric vehicle, then all of a sudden they're going to notice that there are elsewhere emissions associated with the electric vehicle coming from utility plants, they're going to start to complain about the earth rape that's involved in getting the lithium refined, in getting the cobalt and the graphite.
Oh, and also the pollution from the old electric vehicles that are sitting there rotting or catching on fire, you know, that kind of thing, right? You can see it coming.
What will end up happening is the handful of vehicles that will still be available will be EVs, but they'll be vehicles that cost $100,000, $150,000, and that will price probably 98% of the people out there out of vehicles, and that's the end goal.
And that is considered in the technocratic world, that is not a bug, that's a feature of the plan. And so we can't be fooled by this. Every time you hear this talk, even the fact of carbon dioxide being a pollutant, it is plant food, it is necessary for life on this planet, Eric. Just is.
Yeah, you can discern despicabilities, and that's an example of it. The way they began to characterize carbon dioxide as a pollutant, which it isn't. You know, it is an inert gas. It's plant food, as you say. It has nothing to do with fouling the environment. It has nothing to do with air pollution. So to frame it as a pollutant is an example of malicious, deceptive language, and that tells you something about what their motives really are.
Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. By the way, you said you had, a BMW? Is that going to be next week's review? I don't know if you've taken it out on the road yet.
X6, which is kind of a swoopy-roofed version of the X5 that most people will probably be more familiar with.
Okay.
Their mid-sized crossover SUV.
All right. Now, the Genesis GV70, that's the review you have spotlighted on the site this week. And overall, was your impression good of it or what? What do you say?
Very, very. And, it kind of dovetails back to what we've just been talking about in that it's one of the few vehicles, certainly at its price point, that you can still get with a V6 engine, but probably not for much longer. I expect that next year, and if not next year, probably the year after, the only thing you're going to be able to get in it is something like a 2.0-liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine, probably paired up with some kind of a hybrid drivetrain.
All right, very good. Hey, Eric, one of my there are two favorite articles I've been reading the last couple of days on the site there that really got me going. And when more power is not enough, and you were talking about this soon-to-be-released new Corvette, and it sounds absolutely awesome. Something tells me this is like the swan song, because then it'll be, the electric Corvette, which will not
the
sound...
E-Ray.
What the what now?
They call it the E-Ray.
Oh, the E-Ray. Okay, instead of the Stingray. Okay, gotcha. But you're talking about the soon-to-be-released 900-horsepower Vette. So this is just kind of like their Hellcat version, that kind of thing?
Yeah, more or less. You know, it's the latest onslaught or a broadside in the supercar wars. And there's no question that cars in general have become more powerful than they have ever been in the past.
You bet. Just regular passenger cars, much more powerful. In fact, a lot of times your typical Toyota Camry or something is as fast as a muscle car was in the early 70s, really.
Yeah, you anticipated me. Before they pulled the V6 out of the lineup, last year a V6 Camry is quicker to 60 than pretty much every factory stock V8 muscle car that was made back in the 60s and 70s.
Funny to think about that. So I didn't mean to beat or take away your deal there. But tell me your impression, though, about it. Even as fast as this Corvette will be, is it really the same? Give me your take on that.
Well, no, it's very different for a number of reasons. But let me preface it by saying I have driven thousands of cars in my life. And I've driven a number of classic cars. I've owned classic cars, including old Vettes, for example. If you picked out something like, say, a 74, 75 Corvette, something like that, it wouldn't even have a third of the power that this new 900-horsepower Corvette has. But it was more fun. You know, it's not just a question of power. It's a question of fun. And fun is intangible. The new Corvette with its 900 horsepower is an automatic transmission only, and it has all of the safety nets, including launch control. So what do? You basically get in the thing, and you push down hard on the gas pedal, and it goes very quickly. And that's entertaining, but it isn't as fun in an intangible way as feathering the throttle and letting the clutch out, shifting the gears, and being in control of something that's, frankly, a little bit borderline scary, because if you don't know what you're doing, it can get out of control pretty quickly.
Yeah, I remember had a friend of mine that had the original 240Z that I drove, and I had so much fun driving it. But, as great as it was and as quick as it was, you had to pay attention. You had to drive it. There were no anti-lock brakes. There was no traction control, no stability control, nothing like that. You could very easily get yourself in trouble if you were gutting it through a curve and you didn't know what you were doing, right? This is kind of what you were getting at.
Absolutely. There's satisfaction in developing skill and exercising it, knowing that you got those shifts pretty much perfectly timed that last time, even if you did miss one the previous time. And you hit that apex in the corner just right. As opposed to just sort of playing essentially a video game, a virtual reality video game, which is what they're becoming.
Yeah, and that's just it. That's why the vintage cars, though, still have such great appeal for those collectors because, well, you have to drive them. You really have to drive them. It's not a matter of just, I'm going to put it in sport mode and just floor the accelerator, right, and not have to think about anything else.
Also, they were a little quirky. The interesting thing about back in the day, even when they were brand new, those cars were individual in a way that new cars aren't because, it depended on the vagaries of the assembly line, because they were mostly put together by human beings. So there would be slight differences one car to another, even if it was the identical model. And that helped to impart personality. People would name their cars back in the day, remember?
Yep.
Nobody
sure
does
did.
That anymore.
Yeah, the one thing that I also remember, though, is how bad the brakes were in cars.
Yes.
And a lot of people have forgotten about that because even in cheap passenger cars now, the brakes are so much better.
Vastly better. Something that we take for granted, four-wheel disc brakes, there's still a handful of cars, very, very low-end cars, that still have drum brakes. But for the most part, anything that costs more than about $21,000 is going to have four-wheel disc brakes and good four-wheel disc brakes, better brakes than a Corvette from the 70s had.
Indeed. 10 before 7, I'm talking with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Taking your calls, too. If you have a question, comment, maybe looking at a vehicle and something on your mind, let's hear about it, and I'll go to line 2. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. This is Derek from Grants Pass.
Hey, Derek, go ahead. What's your question or comment for Eric? Let's hear it.
Yeah, so my question is the new EV stuff. So my wife, she drives a 2022 Kia Sorento. It's part EV. And I'm just wondering why the cars don't charge the batteries themselves. Like the vehicles, the normal vehicles we drive, it charges the battery. Why don't they have a generator on board that charges with, say, the wheels go around on the bus?
Oh. Well, they actually do. Dodge has got something, it's hilarious. It's called the mobility or range extender. I forget exactly what the verbiage is that they offer with the latest generation Ram trucks. It's basically a generator that you carry with you to keep the battery charged up.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, I think I can answer the question along with you, Eric. I think you would concur, is that there is no free energy out there. Is that if you were to try to have the electric vehicle charge itself, unless you're taking... if you have a huge bank of solar cells that are charging, all it would do is decrease the range. You'd just be charging one battery with another battery is all you'd be doing. Would that be fair?
And we've already got EVs that charge themselves. They're called hybrids.
Yeah, so good point on that. Thanks for the call. Appreciate that, Derek. Let me go to line 2. You're with Eric. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, guys. Keith.
Keith, take it away. What's your question or comment? Go ahead.
Evolution or the viability of resurrecting junkers. I am absolutely positive that it's a good idea. If you have a vehicle that needs a new motor, do it. Put it in it if you can afford it. If you can't afford it, okay. I've got two vehicles I've resurrected. Both of them are 20 and 30 years old, and they're both running fine. And at my age,
well, I'm glad to hear that you're a fan of that. I'll talk with Eric. Eric has an article on just that very thing about it. We'll talk about it before we break, okay? Thanks, Keith. Your phone's a little scratchy this morning, so I have to cut you loose. Let me go to line 4. Hi, you're with Eric. Who's this? Good morning. Hello? Going once, going twice. Okay. Let me go to line 2. Hi there. You're with Eric Peters. Who's this?
Hey, morning, Bill, Bob, and Medford. Good morning, Eric. Love your program. I figured out a good way to finance a new car. I'm going to go buy me a new car, and then I'm going to go drive it off the lot, and then I'm going to go drive down and get in line at a food line and get some food.
Okay.
So I don't have to have a food budget, or at least I'll knock it down quite a bit, but at least I'll have a nice new car to drive in.
Have you noticed how many nice cars are in line at the food banks? Maybe they know something we don't, Bob. I don't know.
Well, the only only thing we can adjust on our budgets, our fixed budgets, is our food bill. So, you know, that's something to keep things in mind.
All right. Hey, appreciate the call there.
Hey,
you know, well, didn't you say the typical car payment right now is what, starting at about $400 most of the time, Eric?
I think that's actually a lowball estimate. I just used that for purposes of illustration in the article. I think it's probably closer to $500 or $600.
And if you're wanting to get a really nice pickup truck there, boy, the sky's the limit in many cases, no doubt.
Oh, I mean, $800, $900, it's a mortgage payment.
Yeah. Well, what used to be a mortgage payment?
Used to be, right, exactly.
Ah, the Biden inflation. What can we say? Let's go to line two. You're with Eric Peters. Good morning. Who's this?
Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. Question or comment? Go ahead.
Yeah, I had called previously a few months ago and talked to Eric about my Mini Cooper, which my husband now drives instead of his big old pickup truck. But we recently purchased for me a 2017 Infiniti QX. 30. Mm-hmm. I know they only made them for a couple of years because it didn't sell super well. But I was just curious what your thoughts were on that vehicle, Eric.
Yeah, generally, they're pretty good. You know, Infiniti, of course, is Nissan's luxury line. And generally speaking, like the other Japanese brands, their luxury lines are as reliable or better than their non-luxury brand offerings. And I've heard nothing bad about that vehicle. As with any used vehicle, the key thing when you go shopping for it is to make sure its condition is good. You know, that's even more important than mileage, more important than how old it is.
Does that help you out?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, whoever, it was a single owner vehicle, whoever had it, aside from the fact that she tore up some of the buttons with her fingernail, the rest of the vehicle is in mint condition. But I was curious, too, about, it's a 2-liter turbocharged, and I know there's something with turbo, different types of turbocharge or something. Sorry, I'm not a car person, but I was just curious if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, the main thing with those is to make sure you keep track of changing the oil minimally according to what the factory specifies. Because turbo engines tend to run hotter and harder, so that's a big deal. And, you know, okay, don't skimp on the quality of the oil. If they recommend a synthetic that's more expensive than a conventional, use it. I personally would cut down whatever the recommended interval is, and do it no later than every 5,000 miles or once a year.
All right. Hey, I really appreciate the call. Thank you for that. Hey, Eric, I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back and take some more calls and questions about this. One thing I was going to add here, I've been reading a lot of transmission people and listening to Dusty's and people on YouTube. I've been watching that when it comes to the continually variable transmission, the CVTs that tend to be much more fragile. If whatever they're talking about for the transmission fluid change interval on it, cut it in half, and I think it'll be okay.
Yep.
And I was just watching how some of these CVT transmissions coming in the newer cars, they have just tiny little cartridge filters in them, and they just get so gunked up so quickly with the metal shavings and everything else that are normally part of the transmission. But people will try to drive it for 100,000 miles, and it just ends in sadness.
Well, it's understandable because that's what they've been told. You know, the manufacturers, they're all guilty of this. They want to make you think that, the service and maintenance on this vehicle is very minimal. You don't have to do anything for up to 100,000 miles. They don't tell you is that if you, you know, adhere to that, it's more than likely you're going to have a big expense after 100,000 miles.
Yeah, the life of the car, meaning you blow the car up and then you come back down and see us again. All right. Hey, we'll try to squeeze a couple more calls in with Eric. 770-5633. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Summer is coming. Don't let breakdowns in the heat leave you stranded. Now through May 31st, get 10% off an engine cooling system service at American Wrench Garage. You can also take advantage of great savings on air conditioning diagnostics and system charges now through the end of summer. American Wrench Garage wants to keep you cool, arrive on time, and save some money doing it. Call now and book an appointment at 541-499-6673. American Wrench Garage, we are United Through Service.
1954, 70 years ago, From Here to Eternity wins the Academy Award. The number two song of the day, The Cordettes' Mr. Sandman. Meantime, store number two for Grover was next to open. Grover Electric and Plumbing in Klamath Falls, Oregon, welcoming do-it-yourselfers and contractors. With a promise of superior service, quality products, and everyday low prices, Grover celebrates 70 years of do-it-yourself and save. For a location near you, visit groverelectric.com. GemRoofing.com.
Looking for reliable roofing experts? Turn to the family-owned gem of our community, Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., your go-to for metal roofing solutions, offering 25-year workmanship guarantee on all projects. New construction, re-roofing project, residential or commercial, they've got you covered. This experienced team ensures a stress-free experience from start to finish. Choose quality. Choose Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. for your metal roofing needs. Call today. Get an estimate tomorrow, 541-941-3736.
Oregon Pacific Financial Advisors and TMT Business Services present Successful Succession Planning for Business. If you are a business owner with over $1 million in annual revenue and pondering selling your business, this is for you. Join them for an insightful evening seminar led by expert business consultants and financial planners and discover strategies to maximize your business value, minimize taxes, and plan your next move. Join them this Thursday evening in Grants Pass at the Tap Rock Northwest Grill. Reserve your spot now by calling 541-772-1116 or visit opfa.com/events. Attend the Successful Succession Planning for Business Owners presentation with Todd Tippin of TMT Business Services and Royal Stanley of Oregon Pacific Financial Advisors and hear financial strategies for your future and the future of your business this Thursday at 5:30 in Grants Pass at Tap Rock Northwest Grill. Visit opfa.com/events to register. Securities offered by United Planners, member FINRA SIPC. United Planners is not affiliated with OFPA or TMT BSI. Don't miss out on securing your business future.
Do you owe the IRS back taxes you can't afford? Are your finances underwater? First Response Resolution in Eagle Point solves tax problems. Their CPA will represent you with the IRS and defend your rights as a taxpayer. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com to schedule your free consultation.
The Bill Meyer Show, 106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD.
7 o'clock, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KCMD, Grants Pass. Hey, I found a live version of Manic Mechanic there, Eric. Welcome back. Let me get you back on from EP Autos. How you doing, Eric?
Good.
Yeah, let's grab some more calls here. Let me go to Jared. Jared, we got your question. Go ahead and fire away with Eric. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so my name is Jared. I'm in the automotive repair side of the industry, and one thing that we're seeing a lot lately is the manufacturers are recommending the 10,000-mile intervals with oil changes. Mm-hmm. It's very clear that they're only trying to get these things to 100,000 miles. We've seen the cause of those 10,000-mile interval recommendations.
What have you been seeing, Jared?
Lots of engine sludge buildup. A lot of these vehicles are very dependent on oil pressure, obviously. Eric knows that.
Yep.
And it's with all of their maintenance. They're recommending these longer intervals, and these cars are not designed to – they're not going to last. That's ultimately what we're seeing.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely. And it gets back to what we were talking about earlier. You know, when they're selling you a car, they want you to believe that you're not going to have to spend much money on maintenance, at least not for the first 10 years, 100,000 miles. So that's the chief reason why they're touting these really extended service intervals, which wind up coming back to bite you in the butt if you buy into them.
And I really appreciate your call, Jared. Thanks for talking. It's 7:03. Let me go to Cliff. Cliff, you have a Ford you had a question about with Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah. Eric, I've got a 2011 F-150 Super Cab, two-wheel drive, and I have an electrical parasitic drain. Mm. Is there a common problem that I can go to on that or what?
Well, unfortunately, there are potentially lots of common problems with that. And you can spend a lot of time chasing it down to figure out what's going on. I'd look to see whether you have a ground issue to begin with. And if you can't trace it down, an easy remedy, it's a little bit of a pain with these modern cars because of all the electronics, is just to put a battery cutoff switch on it, you know, so you don't have to worry about the battery being drained. Or, you know, another thing you can do is put a pigtail on the battery and just hook it up to a trickle charger whenever you park it so you don't have to worry about the battery being drained.
Hey, Cliff, have you tried putting an ammeter on it and pulling each individual fuse so you can figure out which circuit you're getting the draw through? I've done that with cars before.
Yep, that's good advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, no, I haven't done that, but I've looked at a couple of forums online, and there was one mechanic. He says with the rig I have is you have to let it set for about 24 hours for all the electronics to shut down. And then you start doing your test.
Oh, yeah, because it's amazing how active the computers stay, even in shutdown mode there for a while. He's absolutely right about that. I just know that we have at the radio station, one of our radio station vehicles is a early 2000s Ford F2. I think it's an F-150, yeah. And it had a problem with parasitic drain in which there were just bad diodes in the alternator that were causing some of that problem. It was causing a bit of a drain, too. So it's something to look at, okay?
Okay, so on the switch, do I put that on top of the battery post or have to cut in a line?
You can. I mean, that's the generally speaking, that's what people do. It's just a little knob that you can turn connected to the negative to the ground cable. You just, you know, you turn it and it disconnects the battery.
Yeah, they sell them at Bi-Mart, Cliff. I saw one there the other day. I think it's about $12-13 or something. It has a little spinner top on it, and you can just disconnect the battery very easily that way. Okay?
Okay, all right. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
All right. Eric, we'll grab one more here, and then Eric's got to go test drive some vehicles, I think. But hi, who's this? Good morning. You've been holding for a while. Hello?
Yeah, this is Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk, go ahead. Question for Eric?
Yeah, I purchased a Toyota Highlander hybrid and actually like it very much. But my question is, I did not get an extended warranty, and I don't know enough about the hybrids and how durable they are. Is that a good idea or not?
Well, the good news is you bought a Toyota hybrid, and they really are excellent. They have a proven track record, all of them, not just yours, but obviously the Prius and a number of the other ones that they offer, that provided you're not abusing the thing and running it really hard and maintaining it correctly, I think you're better off without the extended warranty, frankly. You know, at some point, you may have to buy a new battery for the thing, but those are pretty inexpensive for Toyota hybrids. They, I think, currently go for, you know, $1,200-1,500, and you probably won't have to do that until you're well over 150,000 miles.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
Kirk, appreciate the call. Really do. And there is one more. I had, an email here, and I just lost the well, hang on. Let's see if I can find this, Eric. It'll just take me a second. Got a lot of things going on in the air. Ah, found it. Here we go. This is a question from last week, Eric. And he was wondering, and this is from Aaron. Aaron wondering, which newer cars post-2015 do not phone home and have the ability to be disabled remotely by the manufacturer or government? Like, say you attend the wrong protest or you make a troubling post on social media. And of all cars you review, please tell me how much phone home over-the-air update functions the car has built in or options to avoid that. And let's see if there's anything else I missed here. And do any of these have a phone home that can be disabled? In other words, you can turn off the ability for the vehicle to communicate with the manufacturer, that kind of thing.
Turning off is one thing. Unfortunately, most of them are going to have, to one degree or another, some form of this connectivity, because almost all new cars, I think practically every car now, has GPS, has some sort of concierge system, you know, similar to OnStar, that can send and receive information. Now, you know, blocking it, like if you disable the antenna, for example, obviously that's going to render your GPS and some of the other functions of the vehicle inoperative. But if you can live with that, you know, now you've disconnected the tether between yourself and the Hive Collective.
All right, something to think about. I appreciate the call as always. See you next week. And we'll, you know, we were going to talk about the cost of the clunkers, you know, keeping a clunker, that sort of thing.
We can get into that in some depth next week.
Yeah, let's do that.
Talking about.
Let's do that next week because, gosh, you know, if people are calling and asking questions, we'll always go to that first. But thank you so much, Eric. EPautos.com. Great talk as always. Be well.
Thanks, Bill.
It's 8 minutes after 7. And Jackson County Clerk Chris Walker is going to be joining me here in a few minutes. What about the ballot issues? Have you been having that? We've been getting some reports of it. And she's going to explain what's going on and what can be done.